Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. Today is Saturday, the 14th of July, Anno Domini 2018. You lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, and for all my friends on Discord, here's my shirt.
Prototype unit.
For all you Windows folks, you Mac folks and Linux folks and Chrome folks can all sit back and horse laugh at this one. The July 2018 Windows and Office patches teem with bugs. We're just beginning to see the fallout. The July 3rd non-security Office 2016 patch KB401-8385 is officially yanked. If you don't recall, KB401-8385, a small patch in a sea of Office fixes, the non-security patch KB401-8385 is a fix introduced in the April Office 2018 security patch, KB401-8319. As Susan Bradley warned 3 months ago, so what we're seeing is a non-security patch for a bug in three-month-old security patch that crashed Office, and the new non-security patch also crashes Office.
A patch to patch the patch.
Which all crash Office. That's progress. Microsoft style. In a completely different part of the world, all of the July patches that have been updated in the Microsoft have been updated in the Microsoft catalog. So last week, Microsoft Patch Tuesday, Tuesday of the month, Microsoft put out a metric bucket load of patches. This week, they patched all the of them except the one they yanked entirely. As of late afternoon Thursday, all of the 2018-07 patches were given a new last updated date of July 13th, except for a few early birds, which were delayed dated July 12th. You may recall that all 129 of the patches were originally posted on July 10th, which was the official Patch Tuesday.
Meanwhile, when I read that one, I had to laugh because just a few days earlier, I had got, you know, my Chromebook got updated.
Yep.
It told me, you know, re-update there. And my phone.
Yep.
And again, oh, gee, it did it overnight.
Yep.
And no issues.
No issues.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. So if you're one of the very many people who updated automatically on Tuesday, you'll find a new update may or may not fix the problems introduced by the fixes that fix the problems introduced by the previous fixes. If... to say that some people are losing faith in Microsoft's patching process is putting it very, very mildly. Of course, Microsoft's not the only one. Apple had some code in iOS 11.3 and below that contained a bug that for some iPhone and iPad users resulted in constant crashes when the word Taiwan was entered in both first and third party app text fields. The remote flaw would also trigger a crash event when attempting to display the Taiwanese flag emoji on certain devices. The process was repeatable in iMessage, Facebook, and WhatsApp. This problem underscores the length to which Apple and other companies will go to appease China's government. It's a patch they put in because China's government insisted that they not display the word Taiwan or the Taiwanese flag. It just underscores the length to which Apple and other companies will go to appease China's government and emphasizes the fact that neither of the two major OS companies is immune to patch problems. Apple patched the bug in iOS 11.4.1. Meanwhile, Linux and Chrome OS patches just keep rolling smoothly along. Thank you very much. And that brings us to our poll of the week. at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And that poll is buggy Microsoft and Apple patches fixed. And your choices are, why am I not surprised? Hey, at least they fixed them. My OSs are fine, thanks. And I think my TRS-80 patches have stopped. So far, we've got 29 votes so far. And I know you'll have something more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the left, excuse me, on the right, the other left, under fascinating stuff, the first choice there is forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the very first poll discussion item topic has the wrong date on it. It says 4 July. Just say 14 July. 14 July 18, buggy Microsoft and Apple patches fixed. And, of course, once you've been there, or even if you haven't, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And this all draws me back to the folks that want to have so much confidence in Windows Defender.
Well,
I mean, they can't even patch their programs correctly, right. And you think they're going to worry about updates to the Windows Defender?
Yeah, well, it's a.
Yeah, you might as well leave the door wide open and just let them come on in.
Although Microsoft does have the problem of an almost infinite number of combinations of computers for things to run on.
Yeah.
And I bet it worked fine in the lab and
right.
probably among their 10,000 beta testers. But you give it to 10 million users.
And that's why we still suggest using third-party software. I mean, because these companies, you know, I mean, Microsoft is too well known for abandoning things. I'm sorry, and that's like you were pointing out in that story. You know, folks are losing trust in the patches. No, they're losing trust in the product.
Right.
The whole product alone is not bowing well for them because, you know, they got to patch the patch, this patch, and, oh, it crashes, and then you have, oh, it messed up my whole computer. Oh, yeah, I look forward to that, you know. Wind up working one day, you wake up the following morning, you find out your machine's rebooted, and, oh, it's not working right.
Right. And a couple of weeks ago, we reported that Microsoft is stopping updating Windows 7, and they had also stopped updating Windows Defender on Windows 7, but I believe they have resumed that. They're saying that was a glitch that caused that problem. Again,
gracefully backpedaling.
Yeah, and let us not forget, Windows Defender is in fact only an anti-spyware program.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an antivirus program. It is not any kind of other malware, anti-malware program.
It's the other way around. It's antivirus only, not
anti-malware. No, it is an anti-spyware program.
Microsoft Security Essentials was the antivirus side of it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Windows Defender, you're right. Windows Defender on Windows 8 is an antivirus program. And on 7, it is only an anti-spyware.
And even at that, it didn't do a great job at all.
No, it really never did.
Rootkits and that still get through, and that was the downfall of that one.
Yep. At any rate, both Microsoft, well, and you're right. Microsoft has the problem of about 100 gazillion different configurations.
Combinations.
No, there are no two machines alike. And you would think, looking at it superficially, that Apple doesn't have that problem because they put out all the hardware, they put out all the software, and they have a minimum number of physical setups that they use. Except that then once you get it, you sloppy thing, you start putting other software on it.
Yep.
And again, who knows what interacts with what, how.
And what that it makes changes to.
Right.
And starts your operating system and everything else.
Right.
And even then, one of the guys in our office, Tyler, was putting in the new Apple laptops that were announced yesterday into our database. There are 94 configurations of the 15-inch.
Yep.
I think there were only 60 of the 13-inch.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Well,
that makes with processor and RAM and storage and video and color, 94 configurations of one model. Now, that's got to be a pain for them to have to inventory parts, too.
You would think,
so,
but apparently...
So we were joking with Jackie, you know, we should order one of each, you know, to have them in stock to sell.
Yeah, no.
Although one of the neat options is they're doing i9 processors now at the high end. And a 4-terabyte SSD is $3,000. That's that's more than the base cost of the computer.
Yep.
So when you max everything out, you're over six.
Now, interestingly, some people were talking about how because of the incredible thinness of the machine and because it really doesn't have a fan in it, that when it starts to overheat, of course, it throttles the processor speed. So you, and because it's so thin and has no fan, it starts to overheat pretty quickly. So you rarely get full power out of a MacBook Pro. Now, it depends on what you're doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If what you're doing is surfing the web and writing and blah, 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 well, get a Chromebook because there are like, even like seven of them. But that won't overload the processor. But if you're doing graphic stuff, audio stuff, that sort of thing, you're going to slow the machine down because it's going to do the auto throttling in order to not overheat.
Yeah. And a lot of our customers will get, in fact, I started using one myself, a thermal pad to help draw the heat away from the computer. There are fans in them. One of the things they did with the new 2016 model, I think we switched to it, they went to asymmetrical fan blades. So there's not the humming noise you hear of symmetrical fan blades, mm-hmm. so it kind of breaks up the noise.
I'm surprised, you know, like the pad that you have it on, that they'll come out with one that literally chills itself.
Yeah, there are active USB-based cooling pads. They draw a little bit of power, unnoticeable power, but it uses one of your USB ports.
Right.
So I'm using a passive one. What I find interesting is my adapter, even now, it's only been running 17 minutes, and this is pretty warm. Because I'm running three video cameras and an audio recording through it.
Right.
But again, if you had some type of pad to, you know, cool things down, the little bit of juice that it would draw, I would think would be beneficial compared to the speed that you'd still maintain because the machine is not getting super hot and slowing itself down.
Well, one of the things, Apple was the first company that I'm aware of that put the power supply external to the machine.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they did that with the Apple
That little brick.
That gets pretty hot by itself.
Well, and that's the point. By taking it out of the machine, the power supply doesn't contribute to the heat. And I remember they made a big deal out of it and called it the floor-mounted power supply.
Yep. I think it was the 2C.
It was the 2C. You're right. It was the 2C.
The little white one with a handle.
Yep.
Roy Scheider used it in 2010.
There you go. And the funny thing about it is that people started to call it the Python. So it looked like a python that had eaten a pig.
Yeah,
so a little thin thing and then a big spot in the middle and then more thin thing. And Apple was not fond of that particular designation. I know that for a fact.
Please don't call it that.
Please don't call it the Python. But now the floor-mounted power supply, the Python, is a normal thing. Everybody is used to it, and every laptop system uses them.
Yep.
And that's just one way to get the heat, some of the heat, out of the device and out into the rest of the world.
And even on desktops, the power supply is usually at the top of the tower, so the heat rises up out of it, and that heat doesn't have to go past all the motherboard components.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Nice music. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Maybe we should catch that show.
That which show is that?
The one that Harry just advertised.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I'm busy Saturdays at noon.
Yeah, I'm busy. I don't have time for that.
All right.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Okay.
So, yeah,
no
well,
fun.
Yeah, let's go from the ridiculous to the sublime. The stable builds the Chrome browser. Chrome 67 has been upgraded with a major security enhancement called Site Isolation that protects users from malicious websites that steal sensitive data. The Spectre CPU vulnerability, which is back, by the way, is an example. Site Isolation is currently operating in Chrome for Windows, the Chrome OS, Chrome on Mac, and, of course, Chrome on Linux. Google estimates that 99% of users on these operating systems are protected, assuming they're using Chrome as their web browser. Site Isolation hasn't yet rolled out for Chrome for Android. Without getting too technical, Spectre operates by stealing data like passwords, cookies, and encryption keys from legitimate websites. The theft is carried out by taking advantage of performance-enhancing features that allow websites to share memory when they contain shared elements, such as iframes or pop-ups. Spectre steals data from legitimate sites by gaining access to this shared memory. Site Isolation stops Spectre by doing away with memory sharing. With Site Isolation in place, content from a website's domain is put in a process that runs in a sandbox that prevents the process from sharing memory with other domains. Spectre can't steal what it can't access. So if, for example, you've got your banking app open on one tab and a site that has the Spectre bug on it on another site, that bug could get at your banking data. Except now, with Chrome, the new version of Chrome 87, it cannot. Site Isolation does have a drawback, and it increases the memory load. Google estimates the additional processes generated by Site Isolation produce a 10 to 13% increase in memory overhead. That increase should not produce noticeable effects for most users. Unless you're running on a 2-gig machine and you open 40 tabs, like Dave does, you're not going to notice it. Site Isolation is an important security update for Chrome. It substantially reduces the danger from threats like Spectre that operate by stealing data from legitimate websites. Google intends to build on Site Isolation to further enhance internet security for the Chrome browser. So how's your browser security? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's pretty difficult now with the Spectre and Meltdown bugs being baked into the architecture of the chip that it's going to be at least 3 or 4 years before new chips can be designed to overcome that. So Microsoft and Intel and Apple and Google and the OS makers are trying to do software mitigations. And the main drawback is that the mitigations often slow down your computer. Because the things they're stopping were things that were put in to speed up your computer.
Right.
Speculative execution, which makes your computer faster. Now they can't do that anymore because then a bad process can find that execution code in memory.
Right. But in this particular case, what's happening is that instead of slowing down your machine or any of the stuff that mitigates Spectre, what they're doing is simply not allowing it access to any other tab.
Right.
So if I have my banking opened on one tab and something else with the Spectre bug in it on another tab, which of course comes to anybody's machine through ads or whatever, it can't get at it because Chrome, as long as you're running at least 67, which if you go to the three dots in the upper right-hand corner, and select help, and then about Chrome OS, the first thing it tells you is what version you have, and you want at least 67 point anything. And so that that should do it. As long as you have that, you're protected at least under Chrome, from the Spectre bug. If you're still using Firefox or IE or Edge or Safari or something else, then no, that protection doesn't occur. But if you are using Chrome OS, or the Chrome OS on a Chromebook, you're fine.
And the first set of Spectre and Meltdown bugs were pretty much patched across the board, but now a researcher found 8 more.
Right.
They've only disclosed the first 5.
Right.
Because they don't want to disclose it until the companies have patches ready.
Right.
So there are even more patches and even more problems.
So right now, at least, if you want to be safe from Spectre, use Chrome. It's a free download for every operating system. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't Chrome on Android. Doesn't do that one yet. And I don't know if there's even Chrome for iOS yet. Is there?
Yeah,
there is. Okay. But Android, and you would think they would do Android. Okay, never mind. Whatever. That's how that works.
They're going where the majority is.
Yeah, they're going where the majority is. There are millions upon billions of Android phones out there. Anyway, they haven't done it yet for that, and there's probably some sort of technical reason for that. But, you know, we tend to worry a lot about the visible issues we have with computers. You know, we worry about viruses and other sorts of malware and how we could get them, but we don't think as much, although it's the major vector for getting stuff nowadays, we don't think as much about our browsers, because our browser is just somewhere where we go somewhere on the internet.
Yep.
But in fact, most of these malware things are controlled over the internet. Once they get in your system, they go to the internet for their control information, for their instructions on what to do. And consequently, if you're protecting yourself at the internet level, which is what the new version of Chrome does, then you should be good. And of course, every operating system can download Chrome, and all browsers can coexist on your machine without a problem. Right. So if you've already got a Windows machine that's got Edge and Internet Explorer on it, doesn't matter. You can download
Firefox,
or any of those.
You have two browsers. You don't even know it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But you can download Chrome and install it and use it. You can even, if you want to, make it your default browser, et cetera, et cetera.
Highly suggested,
because right now, at least right now, it is the most secure browser.
And, you know, the other thing, folks, I'm surprised still are under the concept, you know, that when they're surfing, you know, and say they're surfing for some business here locally, they think, well, it's right here in Rochester. They don't realize how going out to the different servers where that company might have their servers and where it might have to go and different channels that it has to go through just to get there.
Or there's other Rochesters and other states too.
Right. And in addition to that, if you see ads on so many websites, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I need money to keep running my websites. And the only, you know, God bless the people who have contributed through PayPal or whatever. God bless each and every one of you. But the reality is it takes money to keep these sites running, and consequently, I also have ads on my sites, and I have no control over those ads. They come through the Google, in my case, the Google network. There are many networks. Google at least does its best to attempt to vet some of the ads.
Sort that all out,
at least check to see if there's some sort of problem with them. But even there, stuff can get through accidentally, and
it's not
100% control what shows up at the ad site.
We get a lot of phone calls from service companies wanting us to take care of their customers' Macs in New York, because we're in New York, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's about a 6-hour drive to and from. You're going to pay for that time, too? I thought you were in New York. We are. We're in Rochester, New York.
Western New York.
Western New York.
Yeah,
you mean Westchester County?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I was at a wedding. I was at a wedding last week, and half the people came from New York City, and they were all going, "Oh, yeah, it's really nice here in upstate." And we kept saying, "No, you're in Western New York."
Yeah.
Watertown is upstate.
Upstate right? is Albany.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Well, for them, upstate is Westchester County.
Yeah.
Right. It's north of the island. It's upstate. But we kept saying, no, you're in Western New York. How long were you on an airplane to get here? How long did it take you to drive here? You think you're just upstate?
I always like the episodes of Law and Order where they would run to Attica to interview a suspect two or three times a day.
Yeah.
All right, New York City to Attica. That's like a six-hour drive.
Yeah, easy. That's assuming that you don't pay attention much to the speed limit on the back row. Yes.
Well, I had this one company when I was back replacing printers. They contracted our company to go replace printers. And all of a sudden, I get a call for one. And they said, well, we want you to go to Albany. It doesn't look like it's that far.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only 2 inches.
Yeah, right.
I go, all right, you're going to pay me for all the travel time? They go, well, it can't be that much. I said, it's at least 5 hours to there and 5 hours back, plus the service call.
Right.
Well, no, we can't do that. I said, then I can't go do it. I'm not wasting 10 hours out of a day.
Or you pay my airfare.
To go do it.
I can get there faster, though.
Well, you said you'd service New York. I said, yeah, Rochester and the surrounding areas, not all the way to Albany.
Right. Mm. Well, you were willing to go. They just had to pay you to do it.
Yeah, which they didn't want to.
Well, that's not your fault.
Yep.
I hear that a lot from European people that come to visit, you know, they come visit New York City. Oh, can we drive to the Grand Canyon tomorrow? Because in most countries in Europe, you drive drive an hour, you're in a different country.
Yeah. Yep. Or from down New York City and want to go up to see the Niagara Falls.
Yeah, can we go see Niagara Falls? Okay, that's about an 8-hour drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm in a Discord with a bunch of people who are also waiting for their 3D printers, and they're in the Netherlands and they're in Denmark and they're in Germany and they're all visiting each other.
Yeah,
and I'm saying, isn't that a long trip? It's an hour or two.
Yeah.
Oh, right, to go entirely across your own country and then halfway across another country.
Well, that's
I couldn't get to Albany in that amount of time.
There was a guy I was listening to on a podcast. He was saying he was going to go to Paris for the weekend.
Yeah.
From England. Well, it's only an hour through the channel.
Yep.
Well, you can do that in, like, the New England states. I mean, you can go from Connecticut to New Hampshire.
Right.
That's about the only place otherwise.
Well, that's what somebody was saying to me. They said, well, you could go visit this guy because he's in Pennsylvania, and that's right near you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about 5 hours to Pennsylvania. I had to drive, you know, when we drove to Baltimore, it took us almost 5 hours to get out of Pennsylvania into Maryland.
Right.
Yeah, it used to drive, take me 5 hours to get from here to York, Pennsylvania, which is the Harley plant.
Yeah. Right.
5 hours.
And that's now even with that new Interstate 99. It's super highway most of the way to Harrisburg.
Yeah. Replacing the old 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, I told one guy, he said, that can't be that far away. I said, it's about, 700 miles? I forget exactly where this guy lived in Pennsylvania. I said, it was about 700 miles, which is, what did I say to him? It's 700 miles, which is, I believe for you, that's about 380 kilograms Celsius. But, they don't get it. All right, to the phones. No, we're going to take it. All right. Hang on the line. I'm not looking at my time here. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Andy from Greece, and you. It is 38 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Andy from Greece, New York, on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Good afternoon to all of you. Got two questions. The first one, I was at a local dealership the other night getting my car serviced, and they have free Wi-Fi. So I took my Chromebook figuring I'd surf for an hour while they did what they had to do. And I go to get on, and I found the guest network, no password required, and then the computer just sits there and spins and spins and spins, finally comes back and says, DHCP lookup failed.
It said what?
DHCP lookup.
Oh, yeah, okay, DHCP lookup failed, right. What that means is when you connect to a system, you have to the system is configured. DHCP stands for Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol.
Yep.
And what it means is when you connect to somebody, you say, hey, I'd like to get on your network. And the other end says, yeah, absolutely. Here's your IP address, your local IP address.
Because
without that, you can't get on.
Right.
But what this is saying is that their router, which has a DHCP server in it, so does yours at home, their router was not serving DHCP, was not serving IP addresses. Either the router was down or the DHCP part of the router was down or it was full. They only configured it for X number of connections and they were past that number. Whatever the reason, that's at their end and has nothing to do with you. It's also not the internet. It's their internal router at their place.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something I did wrong, but I didn't think so.
Nope, it wasn't.
Okay. Second question. You were talking about this Spectrum bug, virus, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Exploit. Do you have to have multiple windows open for it to hit you?
Not really, no. You can. Here's the deal. If it is an ad from that particular tab, then it can get at whatever you're doing on that particular tab. If you're using Chrome, that's the only tab it can connect to. So, generally speaking, you don't get ads on any site that has, you know, monetary anything on it. So you don't get ads on PayPal. You don't get ads at your bank. So generally speaking, in that sense, you're safe if you only have one tab open.
Okay, so if I'm paying my monthly bills that I do online at certain websites, then I shouldn't have to worry about it.
As long as you don't have another tab or another window.
Yeah, and when I do my bill paying, I only open one tab at a time.
Okay, you should be, theoretically, you should be fine.
Okay.
Should.
Theoretically.
Well, yeah, I know. It's supposed to, woulda, coulda, shoulda, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there haven't been any, as far as I remember now, any real world exploits. These have all been theoretical exploits and proof of concepts. So we're at least a little safe for that.
Okay.
But somebody's going to be first to figure out some way to exploit it.
Somebody with too much time on their hands.
Or they chain the exploits together. You know, you do a Rowhammer attack, and then your Spectre is vulnerable.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So
in fact, there was one called Throwhammer.
Right. Yeah. So they're not as theoretical as you make it sound. They're actually out there. But the fact is, if you only have one tab open, you can't get a version of Spectre that crosses tabs because there's only one tab open. But if you're using Chrome, then you don't have to worry about that at all. And again, as long as you've kept your Chromebook relatively up to date, which happens kind of in the background so you don't even have to think about it, as long as you're on 67 or higher, you should be fine.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, I use my Chromebook for all my web surfing.
There you go, then. You should be fine.
Yeah, you're golden.
Yep.
I use my Windows tower that I built strictly for my bill paying and things.
Right, right. Well, as long as you're using Chrome on that, you should be fine, too.
Okay, well, maybe time to dump Firefox.
It might be.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to say it, but at this point, at this moment, at this time in history, Chrome is more secure than pretty much any other browser.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the other browsers will release.
They'll catch up. That's what I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
You know, so you can wait and hope you don't get caught in between.
Yep.
Or you can switch now and be safe today.
Yeah, I do 99% of all the stuff through Chrome.
Yeah. The only thing I do not in Chrome is Facebook. Because I do that in an entirely different browser so that the universal cookie in Facebook can't see what else I'm doing in an entirely other browser.
Mm.
And the only thing I do in Firefox is Facebook.
That too.
That's it. So, yeah, I'm better off. All right, thanks, Andy.
Okay, well, thank you, guys.
Yep. I got to say about this shirt that I got, it's very nice, very soft, yeah. Very nice.
Ooh.
Very nice. I like it. Sitting here rubbing my body. It's,
so for those of you on the video stream, black out your video now.
Quick, black it.
There's a couple second delay.
There's a 10 second delay. You've got about 4 seconds. Yeah, three, right. Two, one. No, your host.
I bleach. yes, all the browsers will catch up. That is not a question.
They will
be more reluctant to do so because, as we said during the news item, the reality is that it's a 10 to 13% increase in both load and memory usage. So for somebody like Dave, who keeps, 120 tabs open somewhere?
Probably around there, yeah. There's just small slivers.
You may find that you have reached the limit of memory now, that you know, it's an extra 13% overhead total, not per tab, 13% overhead total, 10 to 13%. So you may find that, and it certainly means that there will be a slight increase also in how hard your processor chugs. But again, on any machine that isn't a Coleco Atom, you're not going to notice it.
Yeah.
It's going to be minuscule. So it's not something you need to worry about in that terms unless you have that number of tabs open. And so when you are using a web browser, be aware of what's happening in the tabs you're not on. You know, if you're on a website that does ads, you really have no guarantee of what those ads are shoving into your computer.
And sometimes even just a regular website, they pull content from multiple servers, sometimes outside of their company. They might pull a picture from another, you know, the little Facebook like button or the Twitter badge. Those are coming from another company yet. So not necessarily just an ad. There's remote content on every website you go to.
Right. Many people, and I'm one of them, try at least to take any static graphic elements and load them from my own machine.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody does, and I don't think I'm consistent in it either, because sometimes it's just easier. They've got the picture, particularly a place that has changed the picture a couple of times. Twitter, for example, has changed the bird on three occasions that I can think of. And so it's just easier to load it from them than it is to have to keep going back saying, change this again. You'll find it's not just ads. It's pretty much any sort of graphic element. If you do news, for example, you go to news.google.com or any site that has news, including mine. If we're showing you pictures, those pictures are coming from the site where we're getting the news. We have no control over what's behind those pictures, what's in those pictures. Now, I don't do pictures on here and on Ask Nick, and that's specifically for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are places that do, and because they do, that's what happens. And, of course, once you click on an article and go to that website, all bets are off. You know, whatever's happening there is happening there, and I don't have any control over that. But there's a lot of I see you're at Science News. There are no pictures there except that there's ads.
There's ads, yeah.
And theoretically, those ads have been vetted by Google, but I don't vet them, so I don't honestly know what's going on, and all of those. Now you're at somebody else's website, and now who knows?
Yeah, you don't realize every time you click a link, you could be going to some other website completely, not even in the same website.
You could be going to several websites that bounce you back and forth.
Yep.
Most web browsers have a limit. and every once in a while you'll see a limit count or redirection count exceeded.
Like an astronaut putting on his pants both legs at the same time.
You'll see a notice that says redirection limit exceeded.
And there's a Windows laptop.
Okay. And what that means is that you've been bounced around the internet to the point where the operating system, or rather the web browser, just says, yeah, no, I don't know where you think you're going, but you're not going there now, because who knows where we are at this point. But as long as it stays under that limit number, they can send you anywhere, and they can have – it's very easy to create what are called iframes, which means they've pulled content from another site and stuck it in the middle of their site. Sometimes they do that and make it look like it's their own content.
Native ads.
Native ads as well.
Yeah.
I think rochester.localin1.com pulls Twitter feeds, pulls the Monroe County 911 RSS feed, and a couple of other things, and it has no and pictures. You can see all the pictures from the news articles, and so you don't really know where that stuff is coming from. It's a crapshoot, and so as long as you're using a browser like Chrome that will isolate each tab from every other tab, you're pretty secure. You're pretty safe. But if you're using some other browser, at this point, you may not necessarily. Now, I'm not saying that any of these sites are malicious in any way, shape, or form, but if they're pulling data from another site, they have no control over what's on that other site.
One of the things that Chrome is going to start doing that seems a little heavy-handed, and they've been get some criticism for using their near-monopoly power, is when you go to, right now, when you go to a secure website, you get the green badge. And when you go to an insecure website, there's nothing. Chrome is going to change that, so when you go to a secure website, there's nothing.
Right.
When you go to an insecure website, there's a big red badge.
Right.
I wish they would leave it green badge and red badge for a while.
Right.
But occasionally there are sites that don't need to be secure. But now there's no reason in general to not be secure. The whole problem with encrypting the website and the traffic to the website was the computing power it needed. And so that's why most websites weren't secure until you actually went to log in to use your credit card number.
Right.
But nowadays it's computationally insignificant and free to do websites.
Well, some places are free. Yeah. Sadly, the place I'm at is not free yet.
Well, Let's Encrypt is one of the big free ones.
Right.
Their big thing is you have to renew every, 3 months, 6 months?
Yeah.
Which is a pain, but they set it up to do it automatically. Trying to combat malicious websites. Because now malicious websites can be encrypted.
Right. Now, for example, Ask Nick is not encrypted. It is not set up to do that because you don't log in.
Right.
There's no logging here. You can't. I don't let you log in, so you can't give me a password or any of that other nonsense. So why would I spend the money or the
time or effort?
Yeah. So now I think it's Chrome 6.
And the liability.
Yeah.
You know, the big liability of being entrusted with folks' personal information, depending on what you gather.
Well, the GDPR, the General Data Protection Rule that Europe has instituted. There's all kinds of stuff, including the right to be forgotten. So if I'm logging into a website, I have the right to say "forget me," and that means wipe out all of my data. So far, Facebook is not doing that. And they're paying a daily fine right now. But the fine is insignificant compared to the money they're making. So
eventually, the maximum fine is 20 million euros or 4% of your global revenue.
Yep.
Now, I'm sorry, not revenue, sales.
Right.
Global sales, not global. So Facebook has no sales, right? But they sell ads. So, yeah, it does count.
Yeah.
So they could be fined 20 million euro.
A day.
And it's Chrome 68. So the next version of Chrome coming in July is going to start flagging sites as insecure.
Right.
And you're going to get shamed into either providing security, or what's the bigger fear is that average people are just going to ignore it and say, oh, okay, I want to get to the website.
Right.
And when it needs to be secure, they won't know, and they won't look, because they just say, okay.
Right. I don't think you have to click anything. I think you just get a big red...
Big red banner. Yeah, maybe it's a later version we'll actually put up a warning.
Right. But yeah. I think this first version is just a badge.
Yeah.
All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life listening to this nonsense. And I know you're not that bright, so you're going to get a chance to do it again, because it takes you two to learn a lesson. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, this is lovely. Confirming weeks of leaks and speculation, Microsoft on Monday announced the latest member of the Surface computer family, Surface Go. If you remember the long-discontinued...
Surface Go!
Go! Thunderbirds are Go.
Yeah.
Thundercats are Go.
Yeah, apparently now Surface are Go, too.
If you remember the long-discontinued Surface 3, Microsoft's last attempt at a cheaper tablet, Surface Go is what a Surface 4 probably would have been if the company was still using that branding. Compared to the Surface Pro, it has a smaller screen, 10-inch, 1800 by 1200, a weaker processor, an Intel Pentium Gold 4415Y, which is a two-core, four-thread Kaby Lake chip that was launched about 18 months ago. Slower, smaller storage, 64 gig using the eMMC interface. And reduced battery life, estimated about 9 hours. But it is cheaper. A lot cheaper. The base model costs just $400 compared to $800 for the base Surface Pro. Even with the reduced price, it retains all the major Surface design elements, a variable position kickstand, 8-megapixel rear, 5-megapixel front cameras, with Windows Hello facial recognition, the Surface Connect magnetic charging and dock port, which, okay, and a 10-finger multi-touch screen with Surface Pen support. It retains the micro SDXC card reader and 3.5-millimeter headset jack, adds to this a USB 3.1 Generation 1 Type-C port. As with other Surface tablets, Surface Go supports the type cover detachable keyboard covers, although because of its new smaller size, it needs a new smaller type cover. Microsoft also has a new smaller Surface mobile mouse if you want an external pointing device. Pre-orders for 2 hardware variants and 4 price points start today. Now you start with the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
For $400, you get 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of eMMC storage, and Windows 10 Home. An extra $50 upgrades you to Windows 10 Pro. An extra $150 upgrades you to 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gig NVMe SSD. All 4 combinations will be available. Surface Go type covers are $100 or $130 for the fabric-covered Alcantara versions. And the mouse is $35. Hardware is due to ship August 2nd. In the future, versions of Surface Go with integrated LTE and 256GB NVMe SSDs will be added to the lineup. The operating system choice is a first for Surface. While Microsoft clearly has at least one eye on education, on the education market with Surface Go, it is not aiming there exclusively. Surface Go is also being positioned as a fine home device or as a business tool. For some of those users, the home edition will be adequate, but corporate customers will likely want to pay extra for Pro. Looking to buy a Surface Go? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Just something else they'll bring out and then abandon.
Well, that's what people worry about. Quite honestly, Microsoft has done a lot of that in the past, and we'll see where they take this as to whether or not it gets abandoned or not. But it is a
although most PC vendors don't have brand loyalty like the Apple products get. That you buy a Surface Go now, you know, in a couple of years you might buy a Samsung Chromebook, in a couple of years you might buy a Lenovo ThinkPad.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little brand loyalty, so you almost...
Because one is over, you know, usually coming out with different features or better options, you know, from one brand to the other from time to time, you know. I mean, it's a game of leapfrog, whereas Apple, you're stuck with that. They give you what they want to give you, and either you take that or not.
Well, that's been true since day one. Apple has had much more control over the hardware and the software. In some cases,
total control,
right? And in some cases, that gives them an edge. But in some cases, like we just saw with the re-patching of their patches, it doesn't give them much of an edge. And so there's a lot of pros and cons.
And there's a lot of rumors that Apple is working on their own CPUs, building on the A series they use in their mobile devices, because Intel's having a terrible problem getting chips out.
Yeah.
In fact, the new models they just announced are they're not Cannon Lake. Intel had to make a couple of middle ones. There's a Whiskey Lake and a Sky Lake and an Ice Lake because they can't get to the next chip yet.
Well, part of that problem is they constantly want to make them smaller and faster. That means that the fabs have to be much cleaner, much tighter, and heat dissipation becomes a serious issue at that tiny nanometer size.
And what Microsoft also has to be worried about with this, you know, edge and that is still the Chromebooks are taking over even in the schools. A lot of the schools are getting the Chromebooks because, they're less maintenance for their teachers and the folks that have to maintain the machines. They don't get viruses. They don't get spyware, malware. And they're updated automatically.
Right.
And they can control what's on them. The kids can do all their work and, you know, worry-free. Whereas Windows, you know, rolling out all these patches to do this and that. That's a big pain in the butt for IT folks at schools.
Yep. And that's one extreme advantage that Chromebooks have.
Yes.
The Chromebook management software is very, very easy to use. And like I said, I have not used the Apple iPad control software in years now, but it was horrible. It was horrible. It was a horrible. And I'm hoping it's better now.
They've eventually let third-party users write the management control software.
Oh, good, because it was horrible. At any rate, the point here is that it's very easy to control Chromebooks. It's very easy to set up multiple users on a Chromebook. Chromebooks are cheap. You know, for schools in particular, they only care that students can do the work they need to do.
And they're durable.
And they're durable. Because they don't have... You want to talk about fanless. There you go. This is fanless.
Yep.
They don't care about being the thinnest thing on the planet, so they can make the system a little sturdier.
Yep.
Not this particular one, but many of them are.
Yeah, well, the ones that the kids are, you know, they put them in like those otter boxes type of thing.
Right.
Because kids are going to drop it.
Right.
You know, they're kids, and that's just going to happen, and no big deal. And
right.
if
and
they
you paid $150 for one instead of $300, I can buy two Chromebooks for the price of a Surface Go.
And if one gets damaged, well. You know, versus some of these others, like you say that, there's $300, and it's like, geez.
Well, and in addition, now I've got to set that kid up again.
Yeah.
But on a Chromebook, all I have to do is sign in. And once I sign in with my username and password, all my stuff... It takes a minute or two on the network, but all my stuff shows up. All of my apps show up, all of my tabs show up, all of my bookmarks show up, everything shows up exactly as it was on the other machine. So no worries. So if I'm a student in school and I'm using a Chromebook there, and then I go off to college and buy my own Chromebook, I log in with the same username and password.
Boom, there you are.
Boom, there it is. It's all there. It's completely familiar to me.
Plus, as an IT person, you know, resetting them up, you know, clearing them after the end of the school year. You know, you wipe it out, clear the system out, and you can re-image it a lot quicker.
Yep.
And you're set.
Chromebooks have something called Power Wash.
Yep.
You do, and you can do it remotely with the management software. You do the Power Wash. Now you've got a clean, brand new machine with nothing ever on it at all from anybody else.
They log in, and there they go.
And yet you didn't lose anything because you, who used to use this tablet, this Chromebook, right. You just bought your own Chromebook. All your stuff is in the cloud.
Yep.
So it all comes back down. All your apps come down. All your data comes down. You log in and you open up your drive just the way you did before. Mm-hmm. It's all up there.
Contacts and everything else.
It's easy. It's easy. And it's fast. And it's convenient. And it's cheap. And schools like all of those things. That's why. And you know, the Jesuits famously have said, and I don't know if they really said this, but they're rumored to have said, give me your child before he's 70, he's mine for life.
Yep.
Apple took that to heart back in the day by having all the grammar school and high school programs that they had. Now that's all being taken over by Chromebooks.
And both Apple and Windows has to worry about this.
At RIT, I teach over in Golisano, which is the tech school. Half those kids have Chromebooks. They have big machines at their desks in their dorms or at home, but what they carry around is a Chromebook because you don't need more when you're out in you're taking notes in classes or you're texting friends.
The batteries last a lot longer.
Batteries last not 10, 12 hours, whatever that is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and again, they don't have to worry about the spyware, malware, and the updates, it does it automatically.
Oh, and that's just it. That's the big thing.
It's not even a concern of theirs because it just happens.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And they're staying up to date and no issues.
That's exactly right. All right, let me read another. On Monday, Apple released iOS 11.4.1 for iPhones and iPads, a small update. It fixes a couple of bugs and introduces a new security feature. This is the 15th update since iOS 11 released last September. It's available for the same devices as iOS 11.4, the iPhone 5S and later, the iPad Air and later, the iPad Mini 2 and later, and the 2015 iPod Touch, of which there is no later, apparently. Huh? Okay.
Not yet. Nope.
Not yet.
Not likely ever.
Not likely. The update includes bug fixes and improves the security of the iPhone or iPad. It fixes an issue that prevented some users from viewing the last known location of their AirPods in Find My iPhone. It also improves reliability of syncing mail contacts and notes with Exchange accounts, assuming you want to do that. It also spells the end of OpenGL support. As usual, this iOS release also includes security updates. Significant among them is USB restricted mode, a change originally included in the iOS 12 beta that makes it more difficult for anyone, including authorities, to break into the iPhone through the Lightning port. You'll now find a toggle switch labeled USB accessories in the Touch ID and passcode section of the settings app labeled USB accessories. It's off by default. The caption explains, unlock iPhone to allow USB accessories to connect when it has been more than an hour since your iPhone was unlocked. At first, we thought we would have to wait until iOS 12 for this fall to see this feature, but here it is. Apple also released minor updates for the Apple Watch, Apple TV, and HomePod. The Watch OS update notes simply the Watch OS update notes simply state that it includes improvements and bug fixes. No release notes were provided for tvOS, but it likely includes small performance improvements and bug fixes. Finally, the HomePod update includes general improvement for stability and quality. Based on Apple's previous update cycles, it's possible these are the last updates for this operating system. these operating systems before iOS 12 and its cousins arrive later this year. It's probable that Apple will now shift its focus to iOS 12, likely coming this fall. So what do you think of the latest Apple updates? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, there have been some gray market boxes that will break into phones, and the criminals are using them as well as the police. And so one of the companies that sells one of these boxes say they have a $39 device that can defeat this restricted mode already.
Right.
Until Apple fixes it. Apparently, if you don't turn it on yet, they can get into your phone.
Oh, well, excellent.
Well, really? If you don't turn on restricted mode, then restricted mode isn't on.
What a surprise.
What a surprise, yeah. Right. What's interesting is it turns off the data. Restricted mode turns off the data transmission options, but still leaves the charging options running. So your phone will still charge. It just won't sync any data and allow these gray boxes to type an infinite number of passcodes until they find the right one.
Right, right, right. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Here's another Apple story. Apple said in June it will bar all 32-bit applications from running on up-to-date Macs in little more than a year. Although Apple has been warning Mac owners when they run 32-bit applications since April, and it told customers in June 2017 that the now current Mac OS High Sierra would be among the last additions to support 32-bit apps, no banishment date had been set until this year's Worldwide Developers Conference, or WWDC.
For those in the know, it's WWDC.
WWDC, excuse me.
You can tell you're an outsider.
I'm an outsider, clearly. With Mojave's successor, Mac OS 10.15, possibly launching in the fall of 2019, Mac owners have a year and change to purge their machines of 32-bit apps. To see a list of your Mac's existing 32-bit applications, you should click About This Mac from the Apple menu. Then click the button marked System Report. The 32-bit apps will each be marked No in the 64-bit Intel column. Users may need to widen the System Reports window and or drag some column dividers toward the left to make the 64-bit Intel column visible. If you have 32-bit apps, there's no reason to panic yet. The day when the Macs won't run 32-bit apps is more than a year off, but the days when you can run that 10-year-old version of FileMaker are numbered. It's time to start thinking of actually paying for a replacement. Apple suggested that users check with the software developer to see if 64-bit versions of your favorite titles are available. The search engine comes in handy here with search strings such as 64-bit Mac followed by the application name, usually reporting results. So you do that in Google. Go to Google and say 64-bit Mac space FileMaker. A cruise through the 32-bit app developer's website may be worth a while, as it will be visits to the firm's support section, and if necessary, an email to the developer support team asking about 64-bit availability as well as a timeline if that hasn't already happened, which it probably has. In corporate settings, this kind of investigation would typically be handled by the IT staff, but at home, you will be responsible for migrating apps to 64-bits. Of course, you can always get help from an authorized Apple dealer.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding. Of course, if you don't update for Mojave, you won't have to stop running that ancient copy of FileMaker. If Apple maintains its standard patching policy, it will update Mojave with security fixes until the fall of 2020. After that, well, you're on your own. Are you still running 32-bit Mac software? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And it is popular apps like FileMaker. Microsoft Office didn't go 64-bit until later 2016 versions. The Adobe Creative Suite applications. Quicken and QuickBooks tend to be very fragile. They break on every new version. And in fact, Intuit has stopped making Mac desktop versions of Quicken and QuickBooks. So you have to do internet only and subscription only, which makes sense from their end. They only have to make one version to run on the web, but it's very annoying, and I don't relish the fact of, in fact, I haven't upgraded, but putting all your financial information in their internet-based, you know, QuickBooks,
right,
and hoping they don't have a problem, which
right.
everyone always has a problem.
Yeah. Or that it might even get hacked.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'd want to know, okay, what experience do you have in protecting data?
Right.
Especially financial data.
Right.
Did somebody get in there, you know, and start siphoning off, even if it was just pennies off of different accounts, you know, the odd pennies.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not just they're holding your money, they're holding your account numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's an interesting issue, and I have a great deal of sympathy for the people who don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, but we're kind of at the point where if you're going to stick with the mainstream products, that's how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Now, there are other products that if you go to alternative to .net, for example, and type in QuickBooks, you'll find
lots of alternatives.
153 of them,
yep.
Including free ones like GNU Cash, which runs on Linux, BSD, Solaris, Mac OS X, and Microsoft Windows. Odoo, Ohm Bank, etc., plenty. FreshBooks. That's commercial. ZipBooks is free.
But it's funny, but maybe not, how people will not upgrade their software because you have to pay for it, but they upgrade the OS because it's free, and then suddenly that free OS upgrade is going to cost you $400 or $500 in software you have to upgrade.
Right.
So take a look before you upgrade your software for what programs you use.
Right. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. Good warm afternoon to you.
Yeah.
Question for you about Spectre.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm using Steve Gibson's tool that from GRC. That it's a little executable, and it tells you whether the system's protected from Meltdown and Spectre.
Right.
And mine says that Meltdown is protected, but Spectre is not.
Right.
I'm using a Kaby Lake i3.
Right.
And I was wondering, is there anything I can do about that?
Well, not much at this point. What it is measuring, what it's checking, is if the operating system is protected. Again, if you're using the Chrome browser, you are protected from any cross-tab stuff.
Right. Like you said before.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's not measured by Gibson's tool. Gibson's tool is measuring whether or not the operating system you're running is protected.
Right. Okay.
And Steve is putting a link to that on the website. It's not going to fully report whether or not you're protected.
Mm-hmm. And basically, the only thing you can do if you're not protected is wait for Microsoft or Intel to release a patch.
Right.
But I guess knowing that you're vulnerable and limiting your
right.
usage,
right.
I guess is a good thing.
Well,
would Intel's come via the Microsoft update, or would that be something separate I'd have to do?
No, it should.
Yes.
Yeah. Like we said, if your immediate thing to do is to start using Chrome, the latest version of it, the Chrome browser. The next thing is to wait for Microsoft to put out a patch. One of the things that Steve alluded to earlier is that the problem with all of the fixes for Spectre is that they slow your machine down.
Right.
And they remove some of the internal functionality that gives you additional speed.
And Microsoft has been including the Intel microcode updates in their Windows update, but only for certain generation processors and certain model chipsets.
Right. So you're at the mercy of Microsoft when it comes to updating the operating system itself.
Oh, that makes me feel really good.
It should. But you are at your own mercy, I guess, is the way to put it, when it comes to which browser you use.
And I guess, and I remember reading and hearing on Steve Gibson's podcast is that Windows 1709 had the patches, but the current Windows 1803 does not.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's Microsoft.
Yeah. Exactly. It doesn't need to make sense. They're Microsoft.
Well, thank you, guys. That answers my question. Keep up the good work. I love the show.
Thanks, Mark. We love to hear that.
Take it easy.
Thanks. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We've got the whatchacallit going on today, Park Avenue.
Cornhill.
Cornhill is going
Cornhill,
on today.
The Renaissance
Festival. So I understand that a great deal of our audience is either on the road or at a party somewhere.
Hey, it's happening here in Rochester.
I get it.
You can't complain.
No,
that
you
this
can't.
City.
There's too much to do.
Doesn't exactly. have things going on, you know, especially once summer kicks in. From the Lilac Festival right on down to Park Ave.
Because there's so few nice weekends in the summer here.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the year. I mean, last year, let's face it, a lot of the stuff got washed out. Because we had so much rain. And now we're getting some really warm weather that you can get out there and enjoy it. The Jazz Fest.
Beautiful every night.
All those days, I think they had one night, just a little rain. Nothing to really slow things down. But it was gorgeous.
Yep.
208,000 folks showed up.
Yep.
And that was a record-breaking year for the Jazz Festival, which, you know, it's great.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You got this much, you know, going on and be able to get out there and enjoy
things.
This
is why I tell people all the time, Rochester, New York is the hub of civilization in the Western world.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
And nobody believes me. Seriously, there's a lot that goes on in this town and a lot of it's happening this weekend.
Watka Fest, Letchworth Fest, the Hangar Dance at the Air Show, Warsaw Festival. Overnight in the park at Letchworth. Alexander Tractor Pulls.
Ooh.
In Batavia. Go to the Tractor Pull. Classic Car Cookout. Agatha Christie's Spiderweb. What is that? Oh, it's a play at the Bristol Valley Theater in Naples. The Buffalo Philharmonic is playing at Letchworth. And I'm only up to 10 a.m.
Right, right. And it's happening all over this town, I'll tell you what. Lots of great stuff from lots of great people. We're very proud of our area, Western New York. We were talking about this earlier. I was at a wedding last weekend, and all these people from New York City were saying, wow, it's pretty nice that you're upstate. I said, you're not upstate. You're in Western New York.
Yeah.
Upstate is Lake Champlain.
Watertown and that the Adirondack Mountains. That's upstate.
Plattsburgh. That's upstate.
Yeah.
Here, this is Western New York. Of course, for them, upstate is Westchester County. Are you off the island? You're upstate. Yeah, I get it. I used to live there. I get it. It was pretty funny. I was sitting with a guy, and he was saying, "Oh yeah, I live here." I said, "Oh, I live there." He said, "Where did you live?" I said, "I lived here." He said, "I'm two doors down from there." He said, "Yeah, I lived there when you were about four." So, yeah, it's not. Not quite the same thing, but yeah.
Well, it's just like, you know, because I drive for a living now and around.
Right.
And I go to some of the neighborhoods that I grew up in.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy macaron. I mean, I grew up in one section that we lived for a while was Jones Avenue and Plymouth Avenue.
Sure.
Right there in the corner. And half the house is gone.
Yeah.
Because it was a double. They got rid of one half of it. And just the whole area, you know, it's just changed so much. The corner store that we used to go to and now.
It's all gone.
But
yeah.
I went inside because I had to go into my old school, number 5 school.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the school still there.
That's how old he is. He went to number 5 school.
It was the 5th school in the United States.
Yeah. Hey, I told you. As C even said, I'm older than dirt. I invented dirt.
There you go.
But, you know, going down to that school, because that used to be torture. Come springtime. And what I mean by that is, all right, during the summer months, because back then the school didn't have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. So they'd sit there and open up the windows. The problem with that is it was great because it got some, you know, breeze coming through and everything else. But right across the street, kitty corner, was DiPaolo's Bakery.
Ah, great bread.
You sit there, open the windows, you know, at the, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden this bread aroma is coming sweeping through the bakery, you know, from the bakery over to the school, making donuts and bread and everything else. Like, yeah, you couldn't stay focused.
No, you could not. No, you could not.
Oh.
Yeah. We used to go to Giuseppe's for bread, and we'd get two loaves of Italian bread every Sunday after church. Mm-hmm. And one of them would get home intact, and the other one we'd be gnawing on the end.
You'd have to buy two.
You have to buy two.
Well, to make sure one got home.
Yep.
Well, on the way home from school, for a nickel, you could get one of these big rolls.
Yep.
And they were still warm. So you get that, and on the way home, you'd you know, because the way the rolls stick together, they do like a dozen.
Yeah, yeah.
And you pull out, and they're still warm. So you'd stick your finger in the middle and digging out all the dough and then squish it and chew on the rest all the way home. Oh,
yep.
Warm dough. Oh, it was great.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Great. Those were the days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not so much, but back then, yeah, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
We got talking to somebody about back in the days when there was such great penny candy.
Yep.
You know, and all the different types of penny candy.
And penny candy actually cost a penny.
Yeah. Yeah. Pumpkin seeds and everything else. And
well, then it became penny dreadful.
Right. And then, of course, there were those, remember dots?
Yep.
The little paper thing of little candy dots. They all tasted the same, but at least they were different colors. That was nice. We used to buy balsa airplanes for a nickel.
Rubber band ones I loved.
Yeah, those are the ones, yep. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You young whippersnappers. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
It's unbelievable, but there you have it.
Some things just don't change.
This actually makes me happy, this next story. The processing power of high-end gaming cards made them ideal for cryptocurrency mining rigs, and they were in hot demand when Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other digital token prices leaped to unprecedented heights in late 2017 or early 2018. That trend now appears to be reversing. Add-in board prices appear to be declining, and supplies increasing, following the same path down as digital token prices crash. More than 3 million add-in boards worth $776 million were sold to cryptocurrency miners in 2017, most of them coming from AMD. At the end of last year and into the start of 2018, many high-end expansion boards sold out and overall prices spiked, leaving gamers and tech enthusiasts angry. NVIDIA even took the unusual step of asking retailers of its hardware to prioritize sales to gamers over cryptocurrency miners. Over the past 6 months, however, Bitcoin's price has plummeted from nearly $19,500 per Bitcoin in December to about $6,800 today. $6,800?
If I could only remember that password to my wallet.
Yeah, exactly. Ethereum's price
down to $6,200 now.
Yeah, it's down to $6,200. Oh, I wrote this yesterday. Ethereum's prices dropped from a high of $1,385 in January to about $475 today. That downward trend has been mirrored in the GPU market. And I'm not happy that Bitcoins and Ethereum and all the cryptocurrencies are dropping. I'm happy that I can now buy a graphics card without signing over my firstborn child,
yep,
who's old enough now to complain about it and sue me. The downward trend is mirrored in the GPU market. The number of add-in board shipments aimed at crypto mining declined over 55% from the last quarter of 2017 to this quarter, which helped a first quarter this year, which helped soften high-end GPU prices. Other factors could also be pushing down GPU prices. NVIDIA has not introduced a new family of GPUs since its 10 series Pascal arrived in 2016. The lack of new inventory means the NVIDIA cards now compete with newer options from rival manufacturers. NVIDIA's next generation GPUs may not appear before the end of the year until after inventory returns to safe levels. There's a pent-up demand that gives gamers, given that gamers were not buying new boards due to cost and lack of new options. There are some amazing games set to be released this fall, so we suspect that this will impact the market as well and stabilize prices. Other moves could, I apologize for using impact as a verb. Other moves could further roil the GPU market this year. Chinese ASIC maker Bitmain Technology Limited in April announced that it was taking orders for a new Ethereum mining chipset, the Antminer E3, which retails for only $800. Bitmain, which leads the Bitcoin market in terms of processor power and operates two of the world's largest cryptocurrency mining operations, is expected to turn up the competitive pressure on other ASIC makers with its latest chipset. But with cryptocurrency pricing plummeting as fast as they are, and with mining strikes getting rarer and rarer, the allure of get-rich-quick crypto mining is dropping rapidly, too. Are you crypto mining? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And until the cost of Bitcoin started skyrocketing, it generally would cost you more in electricity to run the servers and miners than you would make earning Bitcoin.
The problem is that's actually still true, because as the price rose, the frequency of hits went down.
Yep.
You don't get paid to mine. You get paid to strike gold.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of hits people were making are making is going down rapidly. So you can spend...
Which is the way the thing was designed.
Which was designed that way, which is fine. But the point is, it used to be that you mined for a couple of weeks and you could make a half a coin or a third of a coin or a quarter of a coin. Now you can mine for months and not make a tenth of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are you using your electricity and your heat and blah, 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 the only... The only country right now that seems to actually be making money on crypto mining is Denmark, because their electricity is so cheap because they do geothermal. They do a lot of geothermal. So their electricity costs are ridiculously tiny.
So right now, with average electricity prices, you'll make about $350 annually mining Bitcoin.
Right.
Except the Bitcoin costs $6,000.
Right. So you're making 1/200th of a Bitcoin in a year.
Yeah.
And
you almost always have to join other miners. So you get a million Chinese mining computers together, and they'll make one Bitcoin a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a company now that lets you. It works kind of like SETI at home. You give them the right to use your processor when you're not using it,
right?
When it's idle, and you know, people are saying, oh, what a great, you make money and you don't have to do anything. Again, they're making probably 2-3 cents a year, and what are they spending in electricity and wear and tear?
Your electricity,
right.
And you're not getting the much for it.
And wear and tear on your machine, because although it sounds like you're really just using your processor, you're also using your hard drive where they store temporary data.
Yep.
In fact, there's a lot of data activity on your hard drive.
And the bad guys are now doing what's being called crypto jacking.
Right.
Or mail mining, you'll get a malicious program that instead of trying to attack water meters or something, will install a Bitcoin miner in your computer. So without you knowing it, you're helping someone else raise money.
Right.
And the symptoms are usually the same, as your computer gets really slow because your computer's doing all this mining work in the background.
Yeah, right. And that's the whole thing. You sign up for that, and then you know, you have nothing to complain about when all of a sudden your bandwidth is going down and you're trying to do something too.
Yep.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
It's like
most of the bad programs, they're not written very well.
No.
If they were written well enough, they'd only take like 20%, 30%.
Yeah.
You'd never notice
They're
right, or if they only worked when your machine was idle, say at 2 in the morning.
Like SETI at home or something like that.
Right. When your screensaver pops on.
Yeah.
You know, and people are buying like I said in the thing, $800 devices that will crypto mine for you.
81% of all of the mining pools are from China.
Right.
Because they have giant hydro dams.
Right. Look at that. The United States isn't even in the top six.
Mm-hmm.
Because we pay more for our electricity. It becomes not worthwhile for us to do that. Now, people still accept Bitcoin for various things. Certainly, if you're going to be on the dark web, you're going to be spending Bitcoin. I get that. But mining it is becoming less and less attractive and less lucrative.
Some of the companies have had to stop taking Bitcoin because of the volatility. You know, if they get donated a Bitcoin when it was $20,000 and they hold on to it, now it's $10,000 or $5,000. So most people that accept Bitcoin, you know, convert it to a different currency almost immediately.
Right. And yes, that works if you can do that. Now you have to find someplace to do that. You have to find someplace who's buying Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Those are less frequent, less easily found than they used to be.
The Vonderdust twins for the other Facebook
guys? Winklevoss.
Winklevoss, yeah. Apparently are stockpiling Bitcoins.
Yep.
But Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin, still has millions of Bitcoins in the wallet that you can see in the blockchain.
Right.
That have never been touched. They're just when he was creating we don't even know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. That's just the name on the code. when they were creating the algorithm, they were testing it and generating Bitcoins. In fact, that was kind of the funny on Steve Gibson's GRC podcast. 5-6 years ago when he did a podcast on the technology and the math of Bitcoin, and it was really neat. And so he put together a quad i7 Windows machine and ran a Bitcoin miner and got 50 Bitcoins overnight.
Yep.
Because it was so new, you could get a lot of Bitcoins quick.
Yes, and the same thing happened when Ethereum came out. You could get Bitcoins fairly quickly. When Dogecoins came out, you could get Bitcoins quickly. Nowadays, you can't. You can't. You can join a pool and get a tenth of a penny a month or something along that line, but that's about it. It's not a viable alternative anymore. I wish it were, but there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, people.
The every get-rich-quick scheme is neither rich nor quick.
Right. Starting your own Bitcoin that other people buy into, it makes you money, but that's about it. That's about it. So, Bitcoin was a great idea. It still is useful for some things, particularly, like I said, if you are on the dark web. But other than that, not so much. All right. That music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. We want to thank each and every one of you who listened in this week. I know that you've got a lot of other pressure on your time and your attention, and we thank you for spending some of it with us. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm not going to thank either one of them, but I want to. All right, I'll thank them. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Steve. I'm Nick Francesco. Wait, don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's fairly safe to listen in. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That is right. It is Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.